Today on Straight Talk Africa, the upcoming presidential and general elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo. To what extent is the political playing field leveled? What do the DRC authorities in Kinshasa have to do in order to deliver a credible poll on December 23rd? That discussion is coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali. Today, it's a discussion on the upcoming presidential and general elections in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Tensions are high in the Democratic Republic of Congo ahead of general elections scheduled for December 23rd. The winner of the race, presidential race, will succeed incumbent President Joseph Kabila, who has been in power since January 2001. My colleague Paul Ndiho has more on the story.
Democratic Republic of Congo President Joseph Kabila gathered his ministers and party officials last week at his farm in Kingakati at the start of the presidential campaign. President Joseph Kabila announced in August that he would abide by the country's constitution and step aside, opening the door to the first ever democratic transfer of power. His announcement calmed tensions that had seen dozens of anti-Kabila demonstrators killed by security forces, since he refused to step down when his constitutional allowable mandate expired in December 2016. Kabila is backing Emmanuel Ramazan Shadary as the presidential candidate of the Common Front for Congo, a coalition of ruling parties.
I'm convinced that the work of rebuilding the Congolese state, initiated by the President of the Republic, His Excellency Joseph Kabila Kabange, and which marks the way forward for us for an emerging Congo, will indeed remain the source of inspiration for all my political commitment.
A mineral-rich country that has never known a peaceful transition of power since its independence from Belgium in 1960. In a bid to present a combined front against President Kabila's preferred successor, seven opposition leaders earlier this month chose a joint presidential candidate, businessman and lawmaker Martin Fayulu. Fayulu drove through the streets of Kinshasa, where he was greeted by thousands of supporters.
Our objective is to achieve credible elections, that is, elections with paper ballots, without voting machines, with a clear and clean electoral list, so that the Congolese tomorrow, when they have voted, that their results reflect their vote.
Police used tear gas to disperse crowds that had overtaken the main road from the airport. For a brief moment, it looked as if Congo's splintered opposition was united. But those hopes were short-lived as opposition party leader Felix Tshisekedi, who had initially backed Fayulu as the joint candidate, later withdrew his support, along with UNC party leader Vital Kamahe. The UDPS is the oldest and biggest opposition party in the DRC. It was co-founded in 1982 by Felix Tshisekedi's famous father, who died in February 2017. According to the DRC constitution, the president is elected in a plurality vote in one round. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. And for more on the upcoming poll in the DRC, I am joined by my VOA Africa division colleague, Roger Muntu himself, host of the popular VOA French to Africa, Roger Muntu Show. Well, I have to say frankly that I am profoundly honored exceedingly humbled to have another opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Same here, Shaka. Same here. Thank you. It's always a pleasure being on your show.
You're most welcome. Right. How come you're not in Kinshasa? You should have been in Kinshasa right now.
I would love to be in Kinshasa right now. I would love. If VOA say, Roger, you're going to Kinshasa tomorrow, I'm gone. That's where I want to be right now.
And what are you getting from Kinshasa?
What I'm getting from Kinshasa is, you know, there's a lot of tension. Let's say, Shaka, with less than a month of the key elections, some are wondering if finally, I mean, if there are difficult time ahead, because right now, let's say the presidential campaign and all the other campaigns started, has officially started 6 days ago, about 6 days ago. Things are moving timidly but rapidly at the same time. So, you know, the people that
I'm speaking with. What exactly do you mean by timidly but rapidly at the same time?
Timidly meaning people start, the candidates start doing campaigning, you know, in the regions and different places. But what I mean rapidly at the same time is that we, as Paul just announced, we've seen some opposition leader returning to the country. We saw Kamere, the last one was Kamere and Felix Tshisekedi from the UDPS returning to Kinshasa. That was yesterday, and we saw so many people going to welcome them and chanting. Prior to that, we saw Mr. Fayulu, you know, who partnered with the other opposition leader, Mbemba and Katumbi, who also returned and was also welcomed. So there's all of that going on. There's all those things, and that's what I mean also by rapidly.
Any particular reason why a man like Jean-Pierre Bemba is not in the race?
Well, there's a lot of things, as we know, about Mbemba. You know, so many other things that we know that he that would not allow him to run, and he's not in the race. And you cover that here, Straight Talk Africa. You know, he was arrested, and then he was released. All those things made it so difficult for him to run, to be in this race.
And Moise Katumbi, Governor
Moise Katumbi, who also Katumbi. Has some legal issues with the government, according to the Congolese government, was not allowed to return to country. And I was in Kinshasa myself. I spoke to Mr. Lambert Mende about that. But according to the Minister of Information, Lambert Mende, was that Mr. Katumbi never made it to the DRC, was not even close to DRC. If he returned to DRC, they would gladly, according to himself, arrest Mr. Katumbi.
Why?
Because according to him, again, he has some issues to deal with the law. You know, he was accused of, you know, bringing the American, how do they call it, people in the DRC to
like
overthrow,
mercenaries
like mercenaries, exactly,
really?
To overthrow Kabila's power. And he has that. He has to go to the court in order to respond to those accusations. That's the reason why they're waiting to arrest him if he returns.
Roger, talk to me briefly about your history. Mm-hmm. When I was doing my homework, I discovered, to my amazement, mm-hmm. that if, in fact, this December 23rd election takes place, mm-hmm. it will be a great historical opportunity for your country, mm-hmm. for the first time, mm-hmm. to have a peaceful transfer of power mm-hmm. from one individual to another.
You said it so right, Shaka Sali. The DRC has never known, as we all know, never, never known a peaceful transition of power since independence from Belgium, 1960. So the Congolese that I speak to, that I talk to every day, are crossing their fingers, hoping that this will be the first, as you just say, the first peaceful election ever, ever. That's why this is so big in the DRC right now. That's why, you know, there's all this you know, movement going on right now all over the world. It's not just in the DRC, but all Congolese and the diaspora. This is big. This is the moment. For some, it's even like this is like a soccer game or a Super Bowl, because they're waiting for that moment that they always prayed. So if they miss, according to those I talked to, if they miss this occasion, that they don't think there will be ever a peaceful passing of you know, power. I should say it that way.
Any particular reason, Roger, given that the name of the country mm-hmm. happens to be the mm-hmm. Democratic Republic of the Congo?
Mm-hmm. Why would you
How
say
that? How did that name come about? If in fact, there is no element of democracy.
That's a very good question. And the people that I talk to, Shaka Sali, every day ask me the same question, because we do debate on my radio show, The RM Show. But they're asking this question, Shaka Sali. How can the country be democratic when students are being killed in universities? How can it be democratic when you have other opposition leader in prison just because of what they had written or they had said? Why would it be called democratic? Well, you have nobody can say publicly, run and march and protest against anything that they believe in. But there are also people who think, but I was in Brazzaville. I was in Brazzaville recently. There are people in Brazzaville who believe that really, you guys in the DRC are making progress in democracy, because here in Brazzaville, we can't even say anything anywhere.
You are probably better off, obviously, than those people on the other side of the river.
Big time.
And probably also somewhere in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
Now, Roger, we talk about democracy.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question in some observer's mind that there is definitely a cultural aspect that is democratic when it comes to Congo. You are talking about Matonge. Mm-hmm. Matonge is considered to be the cultural epicenter of the region. Mm-hmm. Music.
Yeah.
Congolese love music.
Yeah.
And it is something that everybody has unfettered access. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't that translate, for example, into social, economic, political justice?
Music. I don't know if Shekasali, you've also heard of the group called they call them combatant or combatant. They protester. They're all over the diaspora. They have decided that no Congolese musician or music will have a concert outside of the DRC. They have decided that. Why? Because as you just say, like in Matonge, for instance, music is a key. Music is one of the resources in the DRC. It's a big thing in the Congo. So because some of the musicians did in the past sing or made songs to support Kabila and his power, they had made it so those musicians will not be allowed to perform outside of the DRC. And this is causing also a problem, not only for those musicians, but culturally. You know, it's also reducing or changing the whole Congolese culture today. So it's actually affecting that.
You know, I grew up consuming, in fact, that aspect of cultural democracy.
Right.
I used to, of course, we used to hear records, you know, things to do with Bolingo ya telephone. Bolingo ya telephone. What does it mean?
Bolingo ya telephone is love of the telephone.
Really?
Yeah, to love somebody on the phone. So pretty much you met on the telephone and you know, it's a one of like a long distance relationship.
What about the late Franco Luamba Yamakiadi's Mario?
Mario, which is also another song that was all over Africa, all over the world. Mario meaning pretty much an older woman going out with a younger man who's taking advantage of the older, you know, woman, as far as money, cars, house.
I remember.
You remember that song?
I remember, in fact, appearing in a Mombasa discotheque back in 1986.
Right.
And I was with a Ugandan partner, and we were dancing Mario. And next to us was a Congolese couple.
Mm.
Oh, my God, how they could dance. I couldn't believe it.
Really?
I just told
you still
my partner,
remember
I said,
vividly,
you know,
like
what?
It was yesterday.
Why don't we simply watch, really? Now, let's go to the December 23rd election.
Mm-hmm.
What are people talking about right now? Are they talking about personalities, or are they, in fact, talking about the issues that matter?
Right now, they are talking about so many things, Shekasali. The biggest thing right now for the elections in December 23rd is the voting machine. Now, the people don't trust those machines. Mr. Corneille Nanga, who's overseeing the election, the CENI, came here and showed us the voting machine. And according to himself, those are not computers, not regular computers. It's just a printer. Mm-hmm. You choose your candidate and it prints. Now, people are not trusting those machines at all. They think, and they're speculating, that those machines already have been programmed. So whoever you see there, maybe that's not who's going to be the candidate you're going to vote. So they already know, that's what's being talked right now. So, but there's also a lot of issues, and it wants to hear. The people want to hear from those candidates. What's your program? What are you trying to do with us if you take the country? It's okay for Kabila. We already know. Granted,
right.
Kabila has announced that he's not running, and
right.
Mr. Shadari is going to run. But if you come, whoever's going to replace Kabila, what are you bringing to the table? That's also the questions people ask.
But you know as well as I do, Roger, that politicians campaign in poetry.
Of course. We all know
tell
that.
People what they think they need or want
right.
to hear.
Right.
They actually promise heaven on earth. Mm. But when it comes to the business of governing, that one they say is
that's
done
a big
in prose.
Huh? That's a big question right there. So,
what about the people you are talking with, the journalists, the ordinary people, and what have you, your family? Do they have confidence in the ability, for example, of the Electoral Commission to deliver a free, fair, credible, transparent, verifiable vote come December 23rd?
That's the biggest issue right now. And I'm going back again with the voting machines. Because of that, people don't believe in those elections on the voting. You know, when the time comes on the 23rd, they don't believe it's going to be fair. They don't believe it's going to be peaceful at all. You know, there's already small tension starting, and they really don't think it's a really the DRC is entering the turbulent moment right now. It's not going to be easy this few days. So it's people afraid, Shaka Sala. Those people that I speak with, they're scared because they don't know. Everything is like kind of like black in front of them. So they don't know what's going on, what can happen. You know, from now until the
Roger, I was being critical of perhaps the absence of democracy in the Democratic Republic of Congo, but I have to confess that there is probably also some similarities of that right here in Studio 47, because I'm being told by my producer that time is not my best ally. You know? Well,
right.
Thanks to my colleague, Roger Muntu, host of the popular VOA French to Africa, Roger Muntu Show, for that update.
Thank
it was
you.
A pleasure.
Thank you, Sheikh Asali. Thank you.
We'll have you next month.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before pausing for a short break, we want to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now streaming live on Facebook. To watch our show, just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. And don't forget to share it with your friends. We are on Twitter and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA DRC election, and we'll air some of your comments later in the show. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
We're talking about the news and issues you're talking about.
Sharing stories of development and growth across Africa, around the world, and in our lives. Topics that inform, empower,
and change the rules.
It's time for Our Voices
with me, Haiti Adams Fitzpatrick,
and Hadiza Kiari,
and Ayan Bior,
and Orion Itangi Shaka.
It's time for Our Voices.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook. Keywords, Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Uwat. And now joining us here in the Washington studio are two distinguished guests, Dr. Malonga Miatudla, a public health independent consultant. Dr. Mia Tudla has the distinction of having been a member of the team that first discovered Ebola in the Democratic Republic of the Congo in 1976. You happen to be a doctor with a real clinic. Well, Jean-Claude Nkongolo is the president of the Congolese United for Change, a political pressure group. And Nita Evele, a Congolese political activist and independent consultant, joins us live via Skype from Amsterdam, the Netherlands, where I have to say I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
Thank you
for having
us. You're most welcome. Thank you for
inviting us. You're most welcome, Evele. How is Amsterdam?
Very good. Not as cold as I thought, but I'll take it.
I see. Are you going to proceed to Kinshasa to go and vote?
It depends if we're going to have the so-called election anyway.
I see. Well, I have to point out, by the way, that we reached out to the DRC embassy officials here in the nation's capital so that they could come and participate in today's program. But unfortunately, due to circumstances beyond their control, they have not been able to be with us here. We hope that they will join us next month when we do another show on the eve of the elections themselves. Let me come to you immediately, the doctor without a clinic. How are you? How have you been?
So far, so good.
It's been a long time. There used to be a time when you used to be like a very regular type of guest here, especially those days of the Ebola in West Africa.
True. But I'm still involved with Ebola in North Kivu.
Where you actually first discovered it.
This time it's in Ituri and North Kivu.
How come you were only able to discover it, but not able, for example, to end it?
No, Ebola is going to be with us for some time because actually it's we, the human being, we have been encroaching in the environment of Ebola.
Are you suggesting that we are going to have to learn to actually live with it?
For some time, yeah. Until we discover, until first our population becomes immunized or develops some kind of resistance to the virus, as it always happens with new virus. Remember the flu virus in 1914, 1915? It killed more people than the First World War. But eventually we have become resistant to the virus. So something I hope is going to happen with Ebola. But Ebola encountered the virus some 50, 40 years ago.
To what extent do you think it's likely to affect the upcoming election in the DRC?
I don't think it's going to have a great impact on the process, no, because it's still contained in a few town or cities in North Kivu and even in Ituri is in the southern part of the province.
Jean-Claude, you heard your colleague Ms. Evere in Amsterdam when I asked her whether she was going to proceed to Kinshasa to cast her vote, and she said that is if in fact there is going to be an election. What about you? Do you believe that there is going to be an election on December 23rd, or do you have some skepticism?
My skepticism went a little bit down. Originally, it was kind of 50-50. Now it went down. The reason why it went down is because I believe this time the Congolese people, they're going to rise up. They're demanding it. So the government have no option but to deliver the election to the populations. They're demanding it.
Jean-Claude, why do you talk like that, you believe the Congolese people are going to rise up and demand it? You happen to live in a country that is named or called the Democratic Republic of Congo. Are you talking? Are you really saying that there is a democracy deficit in the DRC?
Right. Absolutely. So there is no It's just Democratic Republic of Congo, just by the name. But there are a number of signs that show that the governing party doesn't respect the people. There is no rule of law. If that was the case, then the suffering that the Congolese people has been forced to live with for almost 20 years, it could have stopped for a very long time ago.
Do you have any incontrovertible evidence on that?
The evidence is, think about this. The majority of the population is refusing and rejecting the voting machines, but the government is persisting. So that shows you there is no democracy there, because the will of the people need to be taken consideration. But if you have almost 90% of the people that say no to voting machines, but the government is still persisting, that means that we are in dictatorships rather than democracy.
If in fact you believe that there is no democracy, and in fact there is probably not going to be a free, fair, credible, transparent, verifiable election, then how come most Congolese seem to be getting ready to actually participate?
Okay, so here's what is happening. So the government is trying to play the game. So he started the game. So the strategy was that the opposition is not going to be willing to go to for these elections. So they put a voting machine in place. They corrupt the electoral file, which has almost 6 million of people without fingerprints, so that the politicians, they're going to say, okay, no, we're going to tell our people, do not go for these elections. That way, the governing party, the regime of Kabila, is going to stay in power, cling to power for a very long time. So, but now, what the population is saying is this, look, and don't forget, it was also under pressure of the international community. They forced them to give a date because Nikki Haley was going to go to Congo. That's the reason why they gave that date of December 23rd.
You mean Nikki Haley, the U.S. ambassador to the
Absolutely.
United Nations? Yeah?
So now the game is coming to end because the population of Congo has reached a certain level of political maturity. So they say this, okay, you asking us to go for the voting machines. We won the elections. We won Kabila out of power. With or without voting machine, we are going to go there. This time, we're not going to make the mistake that we made 5 years ago or 10 years ago. We are going to mobilize people. They are going to observe those elections. We're going to make sure we have witnesses in every single voting booth.
Yes.
So that way, we are going to take our own result. If you guys are going to rig the elections, we are going to be there to denounce this. That's what is happening now.
Jean-Claude, let's try to be a little bit democratic in Studio 47 by bringing in Nita. Nita, how are you?
I'm doing great, Chaka. Thank you very much for having us. And hello to your guests in the studio.
You're most welcome. By the way, I recall that I once hosted you on another edition of Straight Talk Africa.
Absolutely.
Now tell me, why are you very skeptical regarding the upcoming elections, really?
That's because the facts that we have in hand show that the election are not being prepared. We are 26 days before the election date, and nobody can tell you for sure, even if the Electoral Commission has those voting machines in place. We're not even sure if the polling places are accounted for. Nobody has seen the agents of the CENI preparing to go all over the DRC and have the election happen. Remember, the DRC is 2.4 million kilometers the surface, I mean, the size of the DRC. So for us to have an election in 3 weeks, that means all the material has to be in place 2 months ago. And so far, we have absolutely no proof of that. A couple of weeks ago, Mr. Nanga, the president of the Electoral Commission, showed us some material that have arrived in Mombasa, Kenya. And those material, actually, nobody ever seen them in DRC. That means in 3 weeks away from the election, we don't even know if the voting machines will make it to the polling places. So that's the reason I'm thinking that the election are not being prepared. Moreover, those machines are electronics. And in DRC, 97% of the country has no electricity. They have to be connected to some kind of power. And nobody has seen the generators or solar system panel that will power those machines or anything that will suggest that a country of 42 million voters, potential voters, in 2.4 million kilometers, will be going to the polling place and actually casting the vote on December 23rd. And don't forget, we're not just having the presidential election. We're having three different elections in one day. And that's just impossible from where I'm sitting right here.
I see. Well, you are tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, so please don't go away because we'll be right back with you.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
Today's youth are not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect. Let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 1730 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
A reminder that we appreciate all of the audience feedback. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, and you can also watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the role of political parties in Africa. Is there adequate space for opposition political groups? Does the African citizen have a right to form an independent opinion that is different from the ruling party or government? Those issues and more on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Today we are talking about the December presidential and general elections in Democratic Republic of Congo. And our guests are Dr. Malong Mia Tudla, a public health independent consultant, Jean-Claude Nkongolo, president of the Congolese United for Change, and Nita Evele, who joins us live via Skype from Amsterdam. We contacted the DRC embassy officials for their participation on today's program, but they were not able to send a representative to join us. We hope that the next edition, they will be right here in Studio 47. Now, Nita, let me come to you again.
Okay.
What about the fact that when you look on the ground in Kinshasa, for example, you look in the DRC, there seems to be a lot of interest in the upcoming elections. Why is there such an interest if, in fact, what you are saying is true?
Like Mr. Kongolo has said, I think the Congolese people are ready to vote. Remember, those elections were supposed to take place 2 years ago in 2016. And Mr. Kabila and his friends decided that they are not going to organize that election. And 2 years later, They're still not ready for those elections. But I think the Congolese people are ready to move on. They are ready to see some change in the country because they've been suffering that since Mr. Kabila became president in the DRC 17 years ago. The life is very difficult. The economy is very had tanked. The war never did really end. So it's really a life of misery that the Congolese people are going through, and I don't think they are ready to give Mr. Kabila another more time for them to continue to suffer. You can see it with the energy we're seeing lately, where all the opposition candidates came back in DRC. You will see that all the people, they are ready to campaign, they are ready to go to the polls, but they will be surprised probably on December 23rd when there will be no polls for them to go vote the new president. They are very excited the fact that Mr. Kabila won't be on the ballot, but they're not confident on Mr. Shadary. At least they want to see some change, and that's where I'm thinking that if the election doesn't go through, which is not going to go through because logistically it's just impossible, also because Mr. Nanga, the president of the Electoral Commission, don't want to help from nobody. He doesn't want the international community to intervene. We all know the past two elections that Mr. Kabila organized, they all were supported almost 100% by the international community. And still, he was not able to hold all the election through. So in 2006, he only held the presidential election, the provincial and the national elections for the representative. And he did not organize the election for the local governance, like the mayors, the people closer to the people on the streets. In 2011, we only had the presidential election and the national election. We never had the provincial election, which also elects the governors and the senators. So this year, in 2016, he completely didn't organize the election at all. After multiple pressure from the people and the international community, he's organizing the election in 2018, but at the same time, he want to do it by himself, which he's not able to do all this time. So I don't even know how they're going to organize that now.
What about the fact that President Kabila is on record saying the reason there was no election, for example, back in 2016, was largely because there was no money, and two, the political environment could not allow an election to take place. Do you buy that?
That's completely false, because the past two elections, they were supported, like I said, financially, logistically, and almost by the international community. In 2016, all those friends came back and offered the same help, and he refused to take it because he never really thought about leaving the power in 2016. That's why he did not organize the election. Everything else is just all excuses.
I see. Let me come to you, doctor, the doctor with the clinic itself. Now, when you look at the DRC, do you look at the dynamics and what have you? If you were to talk to me from the deepest better part of the bottom of your Bakongo heart and soul, a beautiful part of DRC, I've been there a couple of times, I've been to Matadi, the inland port. Do you have confidence in the ability of the government to carry out a free, fair, verifiable, transparent, credible election this time around?
No.
Why?
No, because there is no will. It's more lack of will than lack of ability, because he has been able to do, as Nita was saying, he has been able to do that in 2005. In 2011,
why do you say he has been? I mean, why do you personalize this issue?
Yeah, because the facts are there. The facts are there. We have had two elections because he was willing to do that, and then he accepted the help, assistance from outside. Now, the third time, he didn't have the will to do that because the Constitution forbidden him to seek a third mandate. So what he has been trying to do is to change the election. So it's a problem of willingness more than ability. Because if you, as they say in French, si tu veux, tu peux. If you want, you can.
You can
do it. But this time,
you're
really,
talking about France, which gave us King Louis. Was it the eighth who, at one time,
this
said,
"This time, really,
state, and the state is me."
That's a different story.
So, do you think that Joseph Kabila is doing some kind of l'état-c'est-moi?
I would say, yeah. Maybe he has never said that, but I think if you analyze his behavior and things, it's power corrupts. If you remain a long time in power, you can be the best man in the world, but after a while, you become corrupt. And if the power is absolute, you become
absolutely
corrupted. So he is actually a victim of his own game. But as my friend, my brother Congo was saying, unfortunately, the Congolese want a change.
Unfortunately or fortunately?
So I don't know. Unfortunately for him.
I see.
But fortunately for me, people want change. It's not because he did a good job or a bad job. No. Obama did a good job and he left the office. And according to the contract we signed with him, remember, he's the one who promulgated the present constitution. And then he swore that he's going to respect the constitution. So what we are really asking him to do, just to respect the constitution. Unfortunately, he has been put in a position where he cannot do that.
Jean-Claude, the good doctor here says that Obama served his two terms and left and went home and life continues. You are talking about a society that is not run by an individual or individuals in this country. You're talking about society that is run by strong institutions. You're talking about society that believes in the rule of law. What happened to the Democratic Republic of Congo and indeed the vast majority of countries on the African continent?
That's the big deal. That's the major reason why most of the leaders, not only in Congo, most of the leaders of Africa, they want to cling in power. For two reasons. Number one, because they want to enrich themselves and their families. Number two is because they're afraid. They have done so many bad things, so they have forced their people to suffer for so long. So now they're afraid of getting out of power because they're afraid they're going to end up maybe in jail or maybe persecuted or something like that. So. But the situation in Congo is kind of not so different from any other part of the country, but this is very, very dramatic.
Any part of the country or
any part of the continent?
The continent.
Yeah, any part
Look
of the continent.
Look in particular about the location where the Democratic Republic of Congo is, the Great Lakes.
It is in the center.
Look at the neighbors.
Absolutely.
Your neighbors.
Absolutely. You have about nine neighbors, right?
Yes.
So if...
The other country, by the way, to be bordered by nine countries on the continent.
Get out, because right now he's on his knees. Once he get out, it's going to change the entire region. So let me just point
but
out.
Look at your neighbors.
So they
look at the country that was called Congo Brazzaville, the Republic of Congo.
But I have no.
Look at the Republic of Rwanda.
Yeah, but I have no lesson to take from those countries. Even though. They are moving forwards, but it's not a good example because in Rwanda, in Brazzaville, those two presidents have changed their constitution because they want to cling to power for a very long time.
What about Uganda?
Uganda is almost the same thing. Museveni has been there for a very long time, right? So in Angola, the president was forced because there was some sanctions and those kind of things. That's the reason why he gave up power.
He was there for 38 years only.
Right, but it's only under certain conditions they want to leave power. The bottom line is they want to stay there forever. That's exactly the exact same thing that is trying to happen in Congo.
What about the people? Don't the people in those countries have a say, really?
Yes, the people have a say, but the leadership need to listen to the people. So that's exactly what happened. I'm going to give you
an example. What if the leadership doesn't listen?
So that's a big deal, because that's a good example. Look, we can point out to what happened to Geneva, for example, right? So every single population knew, like the only chance, not the only chance, but the opposition party has greater chance of succeeding if they pull themselves together. Going to Geneva, everybody knew, even the international community, the most qualified person, the person who can bring people together, the person who has the majority of the support of the population was Félix Tshisekedi. But they went there to Geneva, they rigged the process, they chose a weak person, the person who has a political party that has only one representative in the Congress, a person who is very unpopular. It's not a common candidate. That person is a common puppet for Bemba and Katumbi. The system was rigged. That was not the will of the population, and the population spoke about this. That's exactly what we saw yesterday when Kamere and Tshisekedi came back together to the country. You can see the number of people, almost 3 million people on the streets. That's the will of the population.
But Jean-Claude, doesn't that really give an opportunity and an advantage to the candidate of the incumbent government?
That's a very good question. Let me tell you exactly what is going on. The game of the governing regime of Kabila was they're pretending they are popular, right? They know from the bottom of their heart, nobody likes them. So the idea is we're gonna rig the system, we're gonna cheat. So the only way we can cheat, we wanna make sure the opposition is divided. If it's divided, this is what we're gonna do. We're gonna keep our voting machines. We are going to make sure we give them the majority, the opposition party. We can give them maybe 80% of the vote. But that 80%, they're going to divide it among themselves.
But Jean-Claude, the opposition, in fact, is making it easier.
I understand. It's making
for the
it easier.
In Kinshasa
it's making it easier because of.
By being divided.
I understand, because there are two politicians that are greedy. It's us or nothing. They are there for themselves, not for the populations. They are there, if I'm not the president, nothing is going to work. Bemba was excluded. So it's now, in good faith, he doesn't want anybody else to be in power. Katumbi was excluded. In good faith, he doesn't want anybody in power. Let me give you an example. We are fighting Joseph Kabila because he wanted to change the constitution. A lot of people died for that. So now, based on their agreements, they want Martin Fayulu, which is a puppet, a common puppet, not a common candidate. They want him to be there for 2 years. That's against the constitutions.
Are you talking about borrowing a leaf from Moscow, from Russia, where Putin did some kind of game with Medvedev?
Absolutely. That's what they want to do. That's what Joseph Kabila is doing with Emmanuel Sadari.
Evidence? Do you have any specific evidence?
Because Emmanuel Sadari is very unpopular. And then guess what? Emmanuel Sadari is under sanctions because he's a criminal. He cannot move to Europe. He's under sanctions. Why would you put somebody to lead the country is under international sanctions? Because it was a significant amount of killing that happened in Kasai. So, but I want to talk about what the opposition did, because this is something major that can undermine the hope of the people. So the hope of the people was for those people to get together so that they can go against the strategy of the governing party. So now they are giving that governing party the opportunity to go ahead with their plan. The plan was, we are going to make sure the opposition party is going one individually,
united. To be united.
Not united, so that way we can find out excuses to say, okay, look, these people, even though the majority of people, they want them, they are 80%, but 80% divided among maybe 21 opposition parties.
But Jean-Claude, how do you respond to some people, in fact, who are saying that the person that you think should have been the best candidate. You're talking about Felix Tshisekedi. Yes. There are a lot of people who are actually saying that Tshisekedi and Kamei are spoilers.
Okay, so they have no basis for whatsoever. Let me give you a couple reasons why I think Felix Tshisekedi is the best candidate. Number one, the population wants change, sustainable change.
There are people who are saying that Felix Tshisekedi is not Etienne Tshisekedi.
Of course it's not. Of course it's not. That's undisputable. But they want to drain the swamp. You cannot drain the swamp by putting somebody who was part of the system. Felix Tshisekedi has never been part of the system. He's an outsider. So he's there to listen to people. A good example, they signed an agreement, right? But he withdrew a signature based on the will of the people. The people say no, and then he withdrew his signature. That's what we want. We want a leader who can listen to the population grievances. That's number one. Number two.
What kind of evidence really do you have that Tshisekedi made a decision based on the people?
Because I could see the reaction of the population. Don't take my word for it. Look what happened yesterday. It was a raining day.
You know, when you talk, you remind me of the fact that some of the most vociferous African despots, dictators, they actually say power belongs to the people.
Oh, the power belongs to the people.
Yes,
let me give you a couple examples.
In reality, when you are talking about dictators, power belongs to a specific individual.
So if you listen to your population, the population say no to a misstep, and then you take a step back, and then you make sure your decision is based on what the population are saying. Yeah. If you call that person a dictator, so be it.
I see.
Okay? Let me give you one more example. Do you know that Felix Tshisekedi was elected representative from the region of Kasai? And then every representative in Congo, they get money. That guy did not want to be there. He accepted to be poor, but to follow the will of the people.
Let me ask you this question. Incumbent President Joseph Kabila, he has been in power, the last time I checked, since 2001. If you were to talk to me from the deepest, better part of the bottom and the heart, what would you say is his single most important decision so far? And what about his single most regrettable decision in your view?
Okay, so I think the important decision that he made was, I can point out to two. The most current one is the fact that he accepted, even though it was under pressure, some people can still cling to it and then just like refuse to follow whatever they are telling him to follow. So he accepted not to be part of the election. That's the most important thing that I think he has done. Okay? So on the other side, so when he came to power, first of all, he was not elected, right? And his father, like some people are doubting that he's a father because he's not.
It was an armed struggle.
Yes. He came to power.
But really, he was, in fact, his father, Laurent Désiré Kabila, mm-hmm. was really helped to get into power by the neighbors.
Absolutely.
We're talking about Rwanda.
Absolutely.
We're talking about Uganda, Angola, correct?
Yes. So, but he came to power. The most important thing that he said was, I'm going to unite the country.
Has it
right?
united
is
so
the,
far?
Is the country united now? Of course not.
What about infrastructure? He talks about infrastructure.
He talks about infrastructure. Nothing is crumbling. Just like, don't take my word for it. The day yesterday, Tshisekedi and Kamere came to Congo, it was heavy rain. You can see a tremendous amount of flooding into the capital.
I see.
And the capital city now is like garbage. So it's smelling really bad, trash everywhere. And that's where the president lives.
Jean-Claude, in the name of democracy, let me go back to Amsterdam, where our sister Nita is joining us. Nita, are you there?
Yes, I'm still here. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you the same question like I just asked Jean-Claude. If you were to talk to us from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your Congolese heart and soul, what would you say has been the single most important decision that Joseph Kabila has made since coming to power? And what about the single most regrettable decision in your view?
Absolutely. I think Mr. Kabila's greatest achievement was to sign the peace treaty in 2004 and actually put the constitution, the DRC constitution, into place. I think DRC has one of the best constitution that the African countries have. We have almost everything. They give the people a lot of power. They give the people the power to throw out a despot or a tyrant president. We even have a parity clause where men and women should be treated equally. I think the constitution that Mr. Kabila puts signed out as a law in 2005 is one of the bestest achievements so far. And I think his biggest mistake is not to see or hear the cry of the people, which who want to change now. He should have listened to the people in 2016 and leave power peacefully. He would have been upheld as one of the heroes because the Congolese people want to see that change. And the more he's obstinate and refuse to give that change, the worse his future looks. His future looks bleak because right now people are very angry. The suffering is too high. The Congolese people lack basic things like water, food, electricity, roads. So people want anybody who can give them that basic life that they deserve. Don't forget, Congo is one of the richest countries in this planet. And the fact that the people are living in such poverty, it's really puzzling for most of us. And also, since Mr. Kabila came in power, there were never really a peace. Some part of the Congo is still under the law of militias, foreign fighters. And up to today, we have 4.5 million displaced persons within the DRC. If you count all those people that have been displacing in the neighboring country, the country is going into chaos. And that's just because Mr. Kabila refused to leave power. If he leaves power today, I don't think the Congolese really cares who take that power, as long as that person can give them the basic needs that they need. And for me, that's one of Mr. Kabila's greatest achievements and one of his faults.
I see. Well, unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. On that note, we thank our guests for joining us today, Dr. Malonga Miatudla, Jean-Claude Nkongolo, and Nita Evele. Thanks to our field stations, along with our viewers and listeners, and for many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, DRC. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.